Hey girl, welcome to the Empower Her podcast, where we are all about taking purpose-driven action toward building lives we really freaking love. My name's Keisha, and I'm an entrepreneur obsessed with giving you actual tools to help take you from where you are now to where you want to go in your life, career, and relationships. And this podcast, it's all about real talk and having some fun as we share incredible stories, tips, and tricks to help us get out of our own way and unapologetically make some moves. So girlfriend, let's do the damn thing. Girl, I am so excited that you're here for today's interview because we have on the show Emma Isaacs. And if you're not familiar with Emma, you might have heard me talking about her on social media because she wrote a book that I'm currently obsessed with called Winging It. She is the founder and global CEO of a company called Business Chicks that is a global community that operates on two continents in 11 cities. And their company produces more than 100 events annually for women in business. And they've had really cool speakers at their events too, like Sir Richard Branson, Sarah Jessica Parker, Kate Hudson, Ariana Huffington, and all sorts of other big names. But what's really cool about it is like this community is super engaged of women like us that are just trying to go get it, right? And like I said, her book is incredible. I love the way that it's broken down. I think you're really going to vibe with it. We talk a lot about it in today's episode. And we also talk about the fact that she's also a mom of six humans who are under the age of 11, yet she's accomplished so much. She started as a business owner at 18. She was a property investor by 19 and a self-made millionaire by 23. She's also raised more than $13 million for charities all across the globe. She's just incredible. You're going to love her energy. She's super fun. It's just like we're girlfriends chatting, but she's just got a vast of just so much knowledge that she's going to share in today's episode. So I cannot wait to hear what you think. Without further ado, let's dive into the show, girl. Emma, I am so excited to have you here. Welcome to the show, girl.
Yay. Thanks for inviting me on. I'm super pumped for this chat as well. Thank you. I'm really grateful.
Yes, awesome. I have been raving about your book, Winging It. I love the concept of the book. I love the way that you deliver the content in the book, your whole vibe. You're just so like humble and down to earth, but you also are just a boss. So I'm so excited to dive. I'm excited to dive into your brain and just like hear more about your story. So first, let's kind of get everybody on the same page here. If they're not familiar with your story, kind of give them an overview of how this all started, because now they can look at you with this amazing book and this huge community and, you know, everything that you've accomplished. But it's like you started not having any plan that it was going to go this direction. So give us kind of the backstory.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Let's do it. So you can hear from my voice and my accent that I'm not from here. I'm Australian originally, and I moved to Los Angeles 5 years ago now. So we've been living here in California for 5 years, and we absolutely love it. We could do with a bit of school. School would be really great for the kiddos right now, but apart from that, we love LA life. So grew up in Australia. And I suppose my story is a little bit unique in that I actually haven't worked for anyone else before. So I've been what I would call a career entrepreneur. I started my first company when I was 18 years old. After I dropped out of college, I went to university for about 6 months and dropped out, much to my parents, you know, complete horror and dismay. And, you know, really what happened was I met someone out just at a barbecue one weekend. She had started this tiny little staffing agency, and we got talking, and she said, I'm looking to hire someone. So I went in, got that job, and worked there for a few months before buying into the business and becoming the sole director and 50% shareholder of this tiny little staffing agency. So we'd put people into different companies on a temporary and permanent basis. And that's kind of the origin of where my business experience started. So I was 18 years old. Like I said, a college dropout. We had three or four people in the business, and, you know, we were really able to scale that company over the next 7 or so years. And it was great. I learned a lot about everything, you know, really foundational for me in terms of small business, you know, everything from customer service and building cultures and running accounts and you name it, I kind of did it. So that was my first company. Did that for 7 years. And really, I tell people the thing that I focused on most in that business was people and relationships, and really trying to figure out how I could be of service to people and how I could give value in every single interaction. And one of the ways I did that was through networking, you know, and putting myself out into the world and meeting lots of people and stalking people until they'd agreed to, you know, take a meeting with me or have a coffee. Yeah, I mean, in a nice way, but still stalking. And so about, yeah, like I said, 7 years into that business, I got invited to a networking event, and I'd never heard of this company. It was run by a group called Business Chicks. And honestly, my first initial reaction was, that is the worst company name I have ever heard in the world, and I'm not going to that. And, you know, I just thought it was really, I don't know, kind of distasteful. And I was a serious entrepreneur by then, and I'm a feminist. I believe in, you know, female empowerment. And so, yeah, I just said, I'm not going to anything that calls themselves Business Chicks. But she said, listen, get over yourself and come and experience this thing. So in I walked to this networking event, long story short, fell head over heels in love with the concept and the group. And I ran back to my staffing agency and I said, hey, I've just discovered this thing, this amazing community, and I want us all to become members of it. So I passed around my credit card. We all became members. We went along to the next event. And at that event, I heard the business was for sale. So I was 25 at the time. I ran up to the lady at the end of that event and I said, listen, I have no idea how to run a membership organization. I don't know how to produce nor run an event, but I want to talk about this opportunity. So I ended up buying the business, and we started again back in Australia with 250 members. We now reach over 500,000 women across the globe. And I've been at it for 15 years now. So I've been, you know, the sole shareholder. I haven't diluted equity, and, you know, I've been growing and building a community for the past 15 years. So yeah. That's it in a nutshell.
And tell them how many humans you have.
Oh, and the mom thing. Yeah, yeah, sure. So, and on the side.
On the side of all of that
hustle. I forgot about those. I thought you wanted the business story. So my side hustle is being a mom to 6 beautiful kiddos. There are half a dozen of them. And yeah. They range from, my eldest daughter is 11. So they're 11, 9, 7, 5, 3. And the little guy is 8 months old. So yeah, that's a, yeah. It ain't a side hustle. It's a huge part of what I do, obviously. Yeah.
You're doing a lot. Okay. So I want to break down a couple elements of that real quick, because there are some women that are listening to this that feel the pull to do something against what, you know, obviously either parents or a significant other or their friends or their family thinks is the right decision for them. So for you, even just like this, you know, baby Emma of 18 years old decides, I'm going to leave university and I'm going to go start doing this thing. How did that feel? What were your parents' reaction to it? How did you kind of navigate that feeling to do what you felt called to do, even with other people telling you that maybe that wasn't the right choice?
Great question. Awesome question. It felt terrifying, and truth feels terrifying.
Yeah.
So to do the thing that you know you should do, and to do the thing that feels right in your heart and your soul, and ultimately aligns with your purpose, often feels completely terrifying. And that's been my experience of most decisions in my life I've made, whether that means leaving university, whether that means starting a business, whether that means, like, you know, I've home birthed my 6 kiddos in the lounge room, in 6 different homes, mind you.
You are literally such a badass. That is like, I don't have any humans yet. But then when you just hear that, I'm like, that sounds wild in itself.
No, I mean, it's wild, but it's also an experiment in fear, and it's an experiment in courage, and it's an experiment in truth, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not a person that's willing to sit in the discomfort of what everyone else feels is appropriate and what everyone feels is right and what everyone else feels is the done thing. You know, I've always just been a person. And it's not as if I'm not born with this superhuman superpower, yeah. You know, an incredible amount of fearlessness. I'm not. It's just I've practiced listening to what feels right and true, and then doing the thing despite what others think and feel. And it is, you ask the question, it's a terrifying place to be, but it gets less terrifying the more you do it over and over, and the more you practice it and practice it. And again, it does not mean you have to go start this big global business, or you have to have 6 children and you have to have them in your living room. Like, it's not that. We can practice that every day. We can practice that in who we be in conversations, how we show up for ourselves, in our friendships, in our partnerships, in our relationships. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a beautiful question, and it's a scary place when you defy what others believe to be right decisions. And to be honest, my life has been one big experiment in doing things that other people think that I shouldn't do and can't do. And then I show them.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
And you know what? It just makes for more fun. It makes for more adventure and more fun. And I think the beauty's in the attempt, you know, the beauty's not in the result, but is in the attempt. I'm not infatuated with the outcome. You know, mostly the outcomes have been pretty good because when you do try and do things bravely, you get rewarded. But I think the beauty is in the try, you know, the trying of attempting things. So
yeah. We talk a lot about that on the podcast and in my community of like, I am on a mission to help people get more obsessed with the process rather than what the process could produce. Yes. Because I think it's easy for someone to see your story or your success and think, oh my gosh, she must be so brave. She took this massive leap. She created this massive thing. But you're like, I started with these tiny little things to kind of build it up like it's a muscle rather than just, you know, this big thing that a lot of people are seeing at the end. So I love that story. And also when you're working at this recruiting agency and you decide, you know, that you're going to buy into it, it's because another person, can you give them a little context of the story of the person who said you should pick that girl and how you felt getting approached about this? Cause there's where like that thought of like imposter syndrome, can I handle this? Even if in your gut, you're like, I'm just going to go for it. For the woman that maybe doesn't have that natural gut tendency, how did you kind of walk through yourself, your mindset about that?
Yeah. Also great question. I think I'd say a couple of things about that. I think one thing that is perhaps a little bit unique about me, and I'm very, very grateful for it, it was completely by accident, but it was that I started so, so young and so early. And I have found that our appetite for risk and our appetite for conquering fear. This has been my experience. Maybe it's not everyone else's, but mine has been that it wanes a little bit the more responsibility you get and perhaps the older you get. But when you're, you know, younger and you're carefree and you have no clue what you're doing, it's like, oh yeah, screw it.
Like, put it on my credit card. It's fine.
Totally. That's right, you know. So with that story, I mean, to elaborate a bit more, what happened was I got that job at that little recruiting agency. And what I did was really try and make myself as invaluable as possible. So I made sure I was the first person in that office every single morning. I was definitely the last person to leave every single, out of every single person, I was the last to leave at night. I was definitely paid the least amount, but I would make sure everyone had fresh water on their desks and fresh coffee. And like, I would clean out the trash cans and I didn't care. Like, I saw a job that needed to be done and I would do it. There was no, that's not my job. That's not my job description. I just helped. I was in service. I was trying to be valuable. And again, that's been something that has really helped me throughout my whole career. You know, I look at things, you know, even in our home, we're blessed to have a beautiful nanny that works with us. And I see my job as making her job easier and better. And so a lot of people don't see that. They see, oh, they're there to help me. And of course they are, but we talk about in the book a little bit, this whole idea of servant leadership, you know, your job as a leader or a person is to be of service to others. And when you can tackle and approach life that way, it's actually gets returned tenfold. That's been my experience anyway. So always thinking of others. So I tried to serve and I tried to be valuable and be of service to others. And the other business partner in that recruiting agency, he had run big companies throughout the 70s and 80s and 90s, and he wanted to be really on the golf course. That was the truth of the matter. He didn't want to be in a little startup. So he one day sat down with the woman who I'd met at the barbecues, and I'm gonna go. And you know, it was all very amicable and friendly. But as he was walking out the door, he did turn around and point at me and say to her, "If you were going to offer equity to anyone in this company, you'd offer it to that kid sitting over there." And that was just his way of seeing me, I suppose, and seeing the effort that I put in. And it's a crazy story because it was a couple of months really of me being there. But I think the lesson there is that people will see effort and they will appreciate enthusiasm. And it's a theme of the book as well. I really think that being enthusiastic is a really beautiful quality that any single one of us, I don't care if you're a leader or a manager or you have a business or you're in a, I don't care. I don't care if you're a mom at home. You know, being enthusiastic and being able to hold space for people to be encouraged and, you know, to be appreciated is a really beautiful thing that I really try and dial up. So I try and be the person in the room that says, yeah, we can do that, or yeah, it's possible, or we can do better, or whatever. So I think enthusiasm is what got me into that situation as a kid, and it certainly carried me through to my old age of 41.
Oh, please.
I know, I'm still a baby.
But that enthusiasm element is so important, because a lot of times, you know, there's so much that we can't control, but we can control our attitude, which drives our behavior, our perception, everything like that. And as like a through line in your book, there were so many times that I'd stop in the middle and I would like turn to my fiance. I'm like, this is what I believe too. I can't believe she's talking about this. This is so cool. And one thing that you also mentioned that I really want to talk about is this concept of work-life balance. And what I mean by that you said something along the lines of how you feel like it's almost getting like less cool to work hard because of this emphasis on work-life balance. So can you just kind of give the Emma spiel on that? I'm just curious to kind of hear your perspective in general.
Yeah. I mean, I have so many thoughts on this. I mean, what I find ironic about the work-life balance construct that we all kind of subscribe to, and we all talk about it, and I need more work-life balance. And for me, I started working before I started, you know, I mean, I was so young, and my work gave me energy, and I love my work, and it gave me purpose, and it was a vehicle for me to explore creatively and to be kind to others, and yes, to make money, and yes, to grow, and all those other good juicy things that we all want. So then when we started talking about work-life balance, I felt the rhetoric around it was just, you know, you had to kind of, we only accept if you shut your computer down and go for a jog or do your yoga or eat your greens, which is all great things that I do every day. No, not yoga every day, but, you know, I do try and be well as much as possible. But at some point we sort of, how can I say, you used the words, and I think I used the words in the book, made it cool. You know, we made it uncool to work hard. I think at some point we have to get obsessed with what we're doing. You know, you look at anyone who has been successful, and there is a level of obsession with their craft, you know, whether they're a singer, whether they're, you know, a musician, whether they're an artist, whether they're
building a gigantic community of women from all across the globe that attend events. Let's go. Yes.
Yeah. And I'm yet to meet a highly successful person. And I've spent the last 15 years of my life building Business Chicks alongside some of the world's greatest visionaries, business people, celebrities, entrepreneurs. So I have spent time with them. Yeah. I've yet to meet one successful person who has not been at some level obsessive about what they do. Yep. And sometimes, you know, there are some seasons in your life that will allow you to step back and not be as obsessive. But really, if you want to be successful and you want to build something worth talking about, there's going to be points in your life in which you have to make that your obsession. So, I just don't know if that goes along with the shut your computer down and turn off and take your breaks. And, you know, I mean, I've been a lifelong entrepreneur, and I've learned a lot about myself in terms of trying to switch off. I will say this, you never truly switch off. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Society tells us, oh, you never switch off. You never stop your business. I'm like, I'm cool with it. Yes. I'm okay with it. You know, like I have the tools to learn when I need to be present, let's say with the kids, and I want to be on the floor playing blocks, and that's great. And I have the tools to be able to be present in a meeting when I need to be in a meeting, but I'm just, it's okay to be fueled by what you do and what you create. And there are going to be moments where that takes, you know, you away from the things that society tells us we must do every single day. And so.
I think it's so important, because it's true. It's so, so true. But for some reason, a lot of women want to shy away from talking about that. It's like, what's wrong with being obsessed with something that you love? I personally don't think that, you know, entrepreneurship is necessarily for everyone. But if it is for you and it's in line that you're doing something that you feel called to do and you're excited about it, why are we trying to like pretend like we're not excited about something? It doesn't even make sense to me. So when I read that line, that's exactly how I interpreted it, was like, Emma, talk about this. So I love that. Okay.
Yeah. I think also the last thing on that. Sorry.
I just spoke over
you. But the thing is, as well, it assumes that the whole work-life balance thing assumes that work is a negative thing and takes away energy from you, right? Mm. So we start from a point of, oh, we should avoid that and we should focus on life and living. Where, you know, if you can reframe that and spin it a little bit on its axis to say, you know, actually, for some people, they get energy from work. So for me, you know, mom of six kids, I freaking love working and serving and being in my creative power and building. And that's, and so why can't I do more of that? You know? So I think it just takes a little bit of a reframe on that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and it's also, it's hard to be what you can't see, right? So it's like women right. like you or like me or women that are listening to this episode that feel that that's a truth for them. It's like, we have to crank it up and show that even more and talk about this more so that other people yeah. can feel like they're not weird. Like, you're not weird if you love what you do. That's amazing. Right? That's, I mean, that's incredible. So, okay. You have gone to build this community from, you know, 250 women to now it's reaching, you know, 500,000 women. How, in the process, like, take us to, like, you know, a couple years in, how are you labeling that space between where you are now and where you want to go? And how are you kind of showing up when you feel like that vision that you're working towards is further away and you're like, dang, like, it's going to take me a while to get there. Like, how are you kind of navigating that?
Yeah, I love that. That's beautiful. For me, and we started the conversation here, and it's nice to kind of circle back to that, because for me, it's never, ever been about a number. I never started saying, okay, I want to reach X amount of revenue or X amount of net profit or, you know, X amount of members. For me, it was never about that. So I never, and again, I'm absolutely not perfect and I work on this every single day and it's, I practice it. And that's why we call it a practice, because you keep doing it over and over. It's bringing it back to the now and the moment of where you are and truly trying to do your best in that moment. So I never try and project too far out into the future. Yes, I have a vision for what I want my life to look like. I am completely obsessed, and you've read the book, so you understand this. I'm completely obsessed with understanding the numbers in my business as it pertains to cash flow. And, you know, I check my bank account balance every single day, and I have the right people around me to make sure that I understand where the money is and where it's going and how we're placed and how we're tracking. All of that is absolutely yeah. imperative to run a great small business. But for me, it, you know, I don't get stuck in the, oh, but I thought I would be here and I'm not there now. It's not, it's never been that for me. And it's never been about attaching to some, you know, great big lofty number. And for a lot of people, that's really important. And so again, you know, you take from my story what you need and you love what you don't. But for me, it's been very much about how can we be in this moment with the resources that we have, with the systems, with the people that we have, with the culture we have, how can we dial that up and how can we impact more people? Absolutely. But not projecting into the future. So, yeah, I don't think I had a lot. I don't think I certainly didn't start Business Chicks thinking, how do we get to the 500,000 mark?
It would have seemed impossible, right? Like,
right.
Yeah. I feel like I get that question all the time where it's like, you know, people don't feel qualified for this big vision, this like arbitrary number that they put in the sky. And I'm like, well, because you're qualifying yourself in the process. Like, of course you're not qualified yet, but it's like, I bet you, you know, if you started this and you had this vision, you wouldn't even believed that that was possible and it wouldn't have driven you anyway. So it's kind of like, what's the point in a way, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think so as well. And I think we all know, and the sort of premise of winging it is to say, you know, the subline says, you know, stop thinking, start doing, why action beats planning every time, you know. And sometimes people put me in that bucket of, oh, she doesn't plan and she just jumps off cliffs. And, you know, it's like, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying this. I'm saying that, you know, technology moves at such a pace and business moves at such a pace. And, you know, the way we learn and the way we consume content, it all changes, right? So for us to sort of set a plan for 10, 15 years, 20 years, even 5 years out can be actually counterintuitive in a lot of ways. So for me, what's worked is having short, sharp sprints toward, you know, goals. So that might mean a 6-month sprint toward, a certain number or, you know, whatever the objectives are. But for me to really kind of pan out that far and attach to a number that's 10 years in my future, I have found to be counterintuitive, and I found it to be, it leaves me kind of feeling like I'm failing at every point, because, you know, like those big BHAGs, if you like, that we big, hairy, audacious goals that we can sometimes have, they're created in the doing, in the little steps that happen every single day, the little habits, the little, you know, moving the game forward, I call it, just little actions of building those relationships and building those customers and getting the runs on the board. It's, you know, for me, that's where the magic happens. It's right in front of us, doing what we have with what we've got, you know, rather than, don't worry about what's going to happen in 5 years. It's cool. Let that surprise you.
It's true. Cause like, I think it robs you of so much joy and fulfillment of like doing it. Like I feel like there's a difference with doing it to get it done versus doing it to do it. Right. Like for you, it's like the impact of the conferences and, you know, getting to connect with women and the building of the business. And obviously if anyone reads the book, it's like, you know, you know how to do business, but you have this, this way of doing both at the same time, where you're like, I'm present for what this is, but I also understand where I'm going, but I'm not so caught up in the numbers, because that drives me away from what actually drove me to start doing this in the first place, which is the impact. 100%. And I think when people can dance that dance, it's powerful. I mean, obviously your story is a testimony to that, but it's, you know, people that can learn how to just kind of go with it a little bit and maybe have that plan to lessen your anxiety that you don't have a plan, but know that the plan is probably going to change. Cause look at 2020, like the year of the curveball, right?
I know, so, forget it. I mean, I have been through every conceivable type of planning cycle, you know, in the 20 years I've been in entrepreneurship, right? And, you know, I've written the 80-page business plans. And again, like you say, it makes you feel good for the first couple of days and you're all gung-ho with a plan. And then it kind of ends up in the bottom drawer of your desk, right? And you learn to do what feels right for you. So yeah, I mean, I think if I've done anything right, it's about checking in and doing what makes sense to us as a brand and to me as the leader of that brand. And again, we started talking about truth, you know, does this feel true to me and right to me? And if it does, then I go forward. But I think it's about, moving forward with common sense and doing what feels right. And again, that all sounds a bit lofty and,
But it's still tactical, and you give a ton of tactical ways to do that in your book, which is why I love the read of it. It's just, everybody's going to love this book that hasn't read it yet. I'm so excited. But okay, on that hypothetical situation, at a Business Chicks event, someone comes up to you and they're like, Emma, I feel so stuck right now. I just feel stuck in my career, in my business. What's the first like place that you go with them to figure out like, why are they stuck and how to get them unstuck?
Yeah. I mean, listen, whenever I'm stuck, and I've been stuck several times, the first thing I do is I sit with the stuckness. Mm-hmm. So I don't rush the stuckness away, because the stuckness is actually there to teach us something, and it's actually giving us massive clues. And I think what I've seen a lot of people do, and certainly in the last few years of, you know, working with and talking with so many female business owners, we rush out of the stuckness because it feels like, I don't know what to do. I hate this place. So be with the stuckness, you know, and just really try and check in and listen to what's coming up for you in that stuckness. And then from there, it's about being gentle to yourself. You know, I know the times that I've been really stuck. I haven't tried to push like I normally would push, you know, really trying to achieve and do all those things that make us feel good. So I think it's about having a kindness and a gentleness with ourselves. And I think it's also about having, and we talk about it and winging it, the whole, you know, having a tough conversation with ourselves, because I think when we sit in, you know, the silence, and we sit in the introspection and we actually really look within, and we can ask the questions such as, you know, is this actually working or is it not working? And we can have tough conversations with ourselves, because sometimes, as much as, you know, every single one of us positive people like you and me will put out there that anything's possible, you know, and we all have a belief of that, obviously, but you know, we also have to understand that business and small business can be very, very, very stressful. And whilst, you know, there are, you know, ton of tips and tricks and skills you can learn in your entrepreneurial journey to become a better business owner and business leader, you know, it might not be for you. And the business you're running right now might not actually be a business. And it's a really, really tough place to explore and to sit in. But I think, you know, again, coming back to bringing a realness and a truth and an honesty to those conversations is really, really important. It's something that no one's talking about as well, you know? So I think if someone's really stuck, we sit in the discomfort, we explore it, we listen to what's coming up, and we have honest conversations with ourselves.
Girl, I hope you are loving this conversation with Emma as much as I am. I had to pop in here real quick and just thank our sponsor of today's episode, which is Organifi. And obviously, you know I love Organifi. Otherwise, I would not bring them on as our first sponsor of this podcast. And because I love them so much, I want to make sure that you're kept in the loop too. So if you're not familiar, Organifi has an entire product line of completely organic superfood blends and plant-based nutrition. Everything ridiculously high quality ingredients. I love the quality, which is so important, but I also really love the taste because I don't really like to drink things, even if they're really good for me, if they don't taste good. I'm just going to keep it real. And what's awesome is nothing in their entire product line has more than 3 grams of sugar, which is something that I've really been focusing on, like checking labels for like the artificial crap or the fillers. And Organifi is such a clean product. Everything in their line. I love their superfood teas, their regular gold, their Harmony products that's for hormone health, their chocolate gold, their protein, both chocolate and vanilla are both amazing. Their green juice is incredible. You can drink it by itself or you can blend it into smoothies. I love their liver support supplement. They've got an immunity. Like, honestly, I could go on and on because I love their products so much. You could just go check them out if you want to, you know, get some high quality superfoods at a really great price. So you can head to www.organifi.com/Keisha and use code Keisha, K-A-C-I-A, for 20% off any item in their store. That's Organifi, Organifi.com/Keisha and code Keisha for 20% off any item in their store. And then of course, you can always DM me if you're like, oh, Keisha, like I'm picking this product. Should I get this one? Should I try this? Have you tried this? Of course, let me know. Keep me in the loop. And then you can check the show notes for the link as well. Now, with that being said, let's dive back in to this awesome conversation that I'm loving with Emma. Especially if you're a verbal processor. Like, obviously, some people like to journal things out, but I think a lot of women are verbal processors too. It's like, for me, once I just kind of vomit it out, then I'm like, then I can sort through it, as gross as that sounds. Sorry if you're eating breakfast while you're listening to this podcast. But I mean, for real, that has always been so helpful for me too. So I love that advice, really, like, tactical too. Okay, another concept I want to ask you. I told you that I was going to be all over the place because I just have all these ideas in my head that just keep popping up. So you talked about this concept of like playing a bigger game. So and encouraging women to kind of like step up and go for it in a little bit more of a capacity when they do feel like they're settling. So what does that actually look like? And what are some like tangible ways that someone could notice if they're in a place where they're playing too small and they need to just like crank it up a notch, get a little fire under their booty? You know?
I love that. That's awesome. I mean, I think the concept of playing a bigger game really manifests for every single person, every single woman differently, right? For me, it was certainly moving countries, right? So being and having business in a space as small as Australia with only our 26 million people in the entire country, you know, for me, that manifested as I need a bigger court to play on, right? So I came to the United States. So that was just great. That's an easy one. I think playing a bigger game is really just about exploration, if you like, of our self-limiting beliefs. And we all know when we're playing a story in our head that, you know, is keeping us, I don't know, hinged, or is keeping us down, or is making us minimize ourselves, or is making us feel smaller. So again, I think it's about asking yourself that question, like, where am I playing small? Where am I not showing up with the magnitude that I deserve to show up with, right? And so it flies in the face of everything I say about taking action and everything, you know, which is all important. But again, you know, the sitting back, the sitting in silence and really having that study of, geez, show me where I'm playing small and show me where my beliefs are really holding me back and unpacking that. And that might be with our business coach or our therapist or whatever, you know, and it's all those things of like, what would you actually do if you knew you could not fail? And, you know, when you start to ask yourself these questions, your mind can't help but go to a bigger vision for what you can achieve. And, you know, again, that might not be a bigger market or a bigger business. It just might be, I don't know, you know, it might be for you starting a family when you think that's not possible with all the work you have on and, you know, the way your career's growing, whatever, however it manifests. But I think it's just, again, looking deep within and saying, you know, what's holding me back? What in my own little mind is holding me back from doing what I really, really want to do? And then trying to bring an awareness to that and then get into action to try, find that bigger court.
And it's interesting because it comes up for everyone differently, right? And that's, I loved in your book, you talked about this and you broke it down of like kind of signals that you might not be playing big enough. And they were all very different. Like I actually jotted a couple down that you said, like, if you're a little bit bored, if you're hitting your goals too easily, if you find that you're like, you know, getting envious of other people, if you're spending a lot of time on social media, it's like, those are indications. And obviously everybody's so different. For me, it's always when I know I need to crank it up a notch, it's always like a visceral thing. Like I feel it in my body. It's an idea. And then I'm like, I just have to go right now and I'll just figure it out as I go. Yeah. But for a lot of women that I talk to, they feel really nervous about doing that. They hear me say like, you know, I say like, go figure it out. You're going to like get qualified as you're, you know, taking action in the right direction. I'm saying that often, but so many women are stuck in that fear of like, but what are other people going to think of this? But what if I quote unquote fail? So to the woman that's thinking that thought right now of like, Emma, I love this. I want to go for that thing. I know exactly what it is. Right. But I'm so damn scared. Like what do we say to her?
We say to her, you're probably going to fail. Let's get clear on that. It's probably going to happen. So now that we've parked that to the side, because we've all done it and we've all tried and we've all failed. So you're probably going to fail. Let's just get clear on that. Okay. You're probably going to fall flat on your face and you just got to step into it. Like there is no magic silver bullet. I have nothing to tell you that someone else has not told you 500 times, right?
Yep.
I can tell you from working alongside the likes of Sir Richard Branson, Diane von Furstenberg, Brené Brown, Arianna Huffington, Sarah Jessica Parker, like Elizabeth Gilbert, the list goes on, on and on and on. They do not know something that we all do not know, right? They just have tried and they've put one foot in front of the other and they've gone forward. Like they don't have a secret that we're all trying to work out. They have just kept on trying. So, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, they get stuck in this, you know, stuckness, your word, and they think that everyone else got it figured out and they've all got this amazing plan. They've all got this amazing level of talent that they don't have. And it's not true. Like I can tell you again, working alongside these people, traveling with them for weeks on end, listening into their conversations, you know, being privy to their negotiations, they all have the same set of limiting beliefs and what ifs and, you know, all of those things that we all suffer from, but they have gotten into action and they've figured it out as they've gone along. So there's, you know, I would love to tell you I have something new for you, but these are universal laws. These are universal principles that fortune favors the bold. Fortune favors people who are going to try shit, excuse me, and, you know, get into the doing. And so that's the key.
I mean, and that's exactly what the book is all about because it's so important. And like, even what you just said of like, you know, I can't say this in a different way that you haven't already heard, but it is the way in which you deliver this content, like through this book, through the way that you're talking about it, that it's going to resonate with someone because maybe this is the time that they're like, all right, Emma, I hear you. This is my line in the sand. I'm going to go do the damn thing. Yeah. Right. Because I'm realizing that I'm the one that's holding me back by telling myself these BS stories that aren't serving me. Like she has something that I don't, or this person's more qualified. It's like, we got to stop that. So I love your perspective on it. Yeah. So question for you on the book specifically, why did you write it the way that you wrote it? What made you decide, like, I have to write a book about winging it? Cause I was instantly drawn to the title. I was like, I already know I'm going to love this. I don't even know what it's going to say, but I love it. So tell us the story of the book.
So, I mean, the story of the book is, you know, a beautiful way to talk about everything we've already spoken about before. I didn't know how to write a book. I'd never written a book before. I didn't, you know, no matter. I just started with a Word document, put some words in a paper and got writing, you know, like no one, I didn't know how to do it. So I released the book in Australia and New Zealand and it hit all the lists there and did really, really well. And then shopped it around in North America and it just came out a couple of months ago. And, you know, for me, I'm the sort of person who I truly deeply want to serve and I want to serve women. That's my jam. I love to teach and coach and be with women. I think we are so freaking powerful and have so much to offer. So, you know, I'm not a person who can say the same thing 400 different ways. So I've tried to jam pack the book with just really, as you said, tactical, instant gems and also relying on the stories of the people that I've been able to spend a lot of time with. So it's, you know, people tell me that, you know, they put the book down and they're immediately inspired and they want to go start the thing and do the thing. And they feel like a fire has been lit in their belly. And that's what I'm really proud of because it is meant to be, you know, motivational. It is meant to be helpful and be the friend that walks alongside you and says, yeah, we're doing it together. Like, let's go. So yeah, it's really exciting. I mean, I really, truly believe in this book. I'm working on another one right now as well. So I feel like that's one of my reasons to being on this planet is to, you know, really be selfless with sharing everything. I'm totally an open book. I want to share everything that I've learned from others and from my own experiences. So I'm so happy you loved it. It's really great.
And Well, it's really cool because you've had all of this experience where you're interacting with so many people and you take their stories and you weave them into the book. So it's like you've had all this knowledge that you've gained personally, but then you're giving people insight to people, to other people's stories that they might not ever interact with, or maybe, you know, whatever it is. So I love the way that you do that. And I think it's really powerful that, people can pick up this book and they can apply it to whatever. Even for those of you that are listening that maybe aren't entrepreneurial, like, or you don't have a business that you're starting, it's tactical things around like management. It's around like navigating like just life in general. So there's so much that you can take from it, which is why I think it's really applicable to this entire audience of, this is more of like the personal development space, which everything in it is that, right? So
yeah, I mean, it's funny. A lot of people said to me, because I just put pretty much all the knowledge that I have about time management, leadership, building cultures, managing people, you know, building relationships, how to manage your money. And people like are laughing at me because they're like, you could write a whole book on, you know, the 8 different topics in that book. But I'm like, I just want to pick the best of what I know and throw it all in there. Right. So that's kind of the theme of the book.
I literally, why I loved it. Yes. And because it's kind of like tapas, you know, where I was like, you get a little of all of these different things. Like, that's like totally my jam. So that's why I loved it so much.
Yeah,
so,
awesome.
Okay. Now, obviously, you've got this, you know, massive community that you've built. So I want to know what it's been like with all of the pivots that you've had to make along the way. And obviously, like, you know, recently, there's a lot of women that are listening to this podcast that are going through major transitions in their life right now of maybe starting something on the side or having to completely pivot career-wise or whatever it is. You've done these in your personal life from like moving here, but you've also done it probably a bazillion times within Business Tricks and your entire career. So how do you navigate uncertainty? How are you processing change, like from an emotional perspective? What are the thoughts that you're thinking? What are the questions that you're asking yourself? Like, open up your brain and let us like jump in on that because I want to know.
I mean, yeah, no, that's great. I think, to be really honest with you, I think I have totally hit the pandemic wall. I think I am feeling like a lot of people right now, like the, you know, 2020, we're like, okay, we can do this. Let's go. Let's pivot. Let's do it. You know, and we did really well. We obviously, you know, we run, our business model is that we run about 110 live events every single year. So we had to, you know, morph them into digital delivery. And that was all really, you know, successful from a point of view of you know, we're running and producing 3 or 4 digital events online every single week, which we're very, very proud of. We showed up for our community in a way that was meaningful and you know, deeply authentic, and they appreciated that. Yeah. And we've come into 2021 and we're still doing the same thing, and it's still, you know, to an extent working. You know, but I live, I, you know, I'm like a addict. I live for the community. I live for, you know, hugging people and holding space and being with people and breaking bread and all those things. So I would be lying if I said, you know, it's every day I show up out of bed. It's amazing. I certainly feel like I've hit the pandemic wall in a lot of ways. But, you know, what do we come back to? We come back to, okay, cool. Is it working? Is it not working? How do we innovate? How do we meaningfully, you know, do what we were made to do, you know, with what we've got right now? And so we're trying to, it's interesting because Australia is a lot more open than the US. So they are having some live events. They're obviously socially distanced and there's all these protocols in place. But, you know, we had an event yesterday for 500 people, which is extraordinary for me sitting here in LA to even imagine could happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's definitely a time of reinvention and innovation. And, you know, when the pandemic hit, I love the thrill of the change because for me it was, okay, great. We have to stop being so corporate and process driven and scheduled because we can't schedule anything for more than 2 weeks out. We don't know what we're allowed to do. And so, you know, that return to being really scrappy and getting the team focused on, hang on, we're just going to be like innately us and we're not going to see too far out into the future was a really, really beautiful challenge. But yeah, now it's a bit like, okay, enough of this. I want to be able to travel and I want to do all the things that we were, you know, allowed to do.
I know. I like want to hug grandmas for some reason. I'm like, I just want to like hug some elderly people, like in the grocery store. I'm just like feeling that, the extrovert in me.
I love it. Yeah. But what can I say to that? I mean, it's, you know, we have been deeply, you know, grateful to do the work we've done, and we have innovated and twisted and turned it every single, you know, opportunity, but ultimately we've just been ourselves and tried to do that. And I think what's let us do that is because we had built such a strong business and built infrastructure up until that point. And we'd also had a very, very diversified business model. So if our business relied purely and solely on events revenue, we would have been completely screwed. But we have about four or five different revenue streams. So we were, you know, we've been a strong business. We've invested well. We've got good infrastructure, great process, great people. And that's what's sort of, you know, let us get through this past year.
Yeah. I think entrepreneurs, and then just in general, I think it's really opened up people's eyes to the idea of like having multiple streams of income and, you know, just really understanding the importance of that. So I love that you talk about that too. So what do you feel like for you? I want to ask this in three parts. So a couple years into business version of you, Emma, what's the number one thing that you're like struggling with at that stage in your career? Not you now with all of this experience, but like a couple years in, what are you struggling with?
Yeah. Okay. So I would have been a kid, about 21 or so, a little bit of imposter syndrome going on, a little bit of worthiness probably going on. Like, how is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me? I'm, you know, come from a very normal middle-class background. Why is this happening? So that was definitely going on. So know that if you're in the early stages of something successful or big, that's going to creep in at some point. It's going to be like a little monkey on your back.
So did you identify it like at the time when it was happening?
Yeah. And it's not as if it ever really, I don't think it ever really 100% goes away. I mean, I've been at some tables where I've looked around going, what am I doing here? Like, they are going to find out at some point. They're going to walk me out because so it never exactly really goes away. And that's cool as well. It's, again, being aware of it and knowing that if someone else says you're worthy enough to be at that table, then you're worthy enough. So, but I think, at the start, I was thinking about that. I was definitely, you know, cash flow in early days is just such a critical thing, and really understanding how you, I know it sounds funny, it's very 101, but understanding how you make your money, where your money goes, you know, how much it costs you to turn the lights in your office if you have an office, you know, every single month, but just really, really knowing and understanding your business. So cash flow is a big deal that, you know, I never stuck my head in the sand with, even though it doesn't come naturally to me. I don't think, you know, money and numbers don't come naturally to me, but I've made it so, because if you want to run anything, you need to understand those. So I think, I think a bit of imposter syndrome. I think, you know, just understanding cash flow was happening a couple of years into the business. And, you know, working out growth strategy, like where growth is going to come from and, you know, doing the right work. You know, this is a big thing that I talk to my team about. We can all be very, very busy. Being very busy does not mean you're actually, you know, being productive. I'm doing a lot of thinking at the moment about the new world and that we find ourselves in and how we're going to have to change and, you know, morph into that. And it really is, for me, one of our company values is doing the right work, right? So it's often okay to take shortcuts, and it's often okay to not do the big fancy presentation. You know, it's, you know, we've got to be obsessed and focused on output and not necessarily input. I think a lot of people get confused and think, but I'm working 18 hours a day. I don't care. Like, you can probably get done what you need to get done in 2 hours. I actually, there's alarm bells for me if you are working that hard, because you're probably doing the wrong work. So yeah, I think those three things, imposter syndrome, watching cash flow, and, you know, having an eye on growth at all times. Where's the next, you know, client going to come from? Where's the next hit going to come from in terms of, you know, in cash flow injection, whatever that means to people. So they were the things that baby Emma was thinking about.
Baby Emma. Yeah. So when this imposter syndrome feeling comes in, right? Are you, like, for me, what I'm doing whenever I feel that, I'm like, I have to remind myself, like, you worked hard to be at this space. Like, you earned your spot here. You're only an imposter if you're acting. That's always what I go to. Like, my default thoughts are like, you're not an imposter because you're literally just being yourself. There's no way to do that wrong. Yeah. But for you, whenever you're in a room or in different seasons of your career, when you've been in a room where you're like, holy crap, like, am I qualified to be in this room? Are all these people going to find out? Like, what are the thoughts that you're thinking in your head that are kind of helping support you at that point?
I think the number one thing is about having a bit of humility and 100% being yourself, right? Because people have said this to me a number of times, like, just be you and you cannot go wrong. You know, it can be as basic as that. The minute you try and be you know, look as smart as someone else or be as qualified or be as whatever, you know, insert whatever adjective you want in there. It's a moment it all falls apart. So I just try and get back to being uniquely who I am. And I believe that. I believe you can't fail if you try to pretend to be someone you're not, then people can see through that. They can, they can smell that stuff.
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So we had baby Emma and now we've got like middle Emma. Okay. Middle Emma so at this point, like, is this kind of when you're like, this thing is like taken off, like, holy moly. What are the thoughts that are coming up for you right then? How are you processing that? What's middle of career so far, Emma, thinking?
This is good. I got it. At this point, I'm thinking, how do I maximize this, right? The opportunity is now, make hay while the sun shines. Like, how do I maximize this thing? So, you know, this is probably, I was in my, you know, early to mid 30s, I had the energy, I had no kids. I was like, maximize, like, the time is now. So I was just running and I was thinking and I was doing and I was just pushing myself as much as possible, because really, you know, you will turn around and you will, you know, the last couple of decades will have flown by. So in that moment when the business was really, really on this huge growth trajectory and we were, you know, it was an incredible time, I was thinking, okay, how do I maximize? How do I, you know, I did things at that point where, you know, I was extracting value from the businesses and I was building my investment property portfolio. I made sure I extracted value from the business and I bought, you know, I own our headquarters in Australia. So I bought a whole floor of an office building there. I was setting myself up, right? Really trying to understand that this is the time that I can be probably, you know, most powerful. And I was building, laying foundations. So that was the thinking in those couple of years.
Yeah. So huge. And I think anyone listening to this, like, see yourself in that stage. It's obviously not about age or years of experience, but kind of what stage are you in that? I think that's really powerful, like, very tangible that people can take from that. So now this season of your business and your life, besides hitting the pandemic wall, where are you at right now? You're obviously writing another book. Like, what are you excited about? What are you thinking about? What are you worried about right now? Give us that.
Yeah. I mean, I think as your business grows, that the next stage is certainly about the continuous reinvention. So how do you stay fresh? How do you stay relevant? How do you stay needed? How do you stay top of mind in front of your audience? So that's definitely going on for us. What keeps me up at night and what I think about a lot is talent and people. So do I have the right people on the bus? How do I get the most from my people? How do I inspire them? How do I get them through so that they too don't hit the pandemic wall? So really that's where I'm at in my business journey. You know, it's about how do I inspire others? How do I get the most from my people? How do I make the journey a little bit more gentle for them? How do I make them enjoy their work? And that's certainly where we find ourselves today. And the reinvention thing, you know, the continuous innovation and improvement and staying fresh is really what I'm thinking about today.
I love it. So do you feel like you're just kind of warming up right now still? Because I feel like you have this like energy and enthusiasm and excitement that you're like, and I'm writing my next book. Like, how are you maintaining that enthusiasm?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I'm always up to something. And if I'm not up to something, I'm always trying to get myself a little bit more trouble or push the boundaries a little bit. And that's something that I've been like since I was a child, right? So, you know, but it's also okay this year to know that, you know, we're all under tremendous you know, in whatever way it manifests for you, but we're all under tremendous pressure and stress. So if we're not having our foot as firmly placed on the, you know, pedal as we normally do, that's okay at all. You know, it's okay to go a bit slower. It's okay to break a little. It's okay to pause a little and, you know, wait for the next wave to come. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I talk about this when I do different events and podcasts and things. It's, you know, really about being kind to yourself. You know, it's really about turning around and saying, hey, I'm doing my best in this moment. And it might not be at the same pace I was doing 2 years ago or, you know, 2 years into my future, but it's having a kindness. It's, we should all be kind to others, but we also should be kind to ourselves. So I bring an awareness to that. And I say, you know what, if I'm going a little bit slower today, that's totally super cool. You know, tomorrow might be a fast day. So I think the kindness thing is where it's at for sure.
It's we know not to compare ourselves to other people, but it's also this like idea that you just made me think of that, like, we also can't compare ourselves to different versions of ourselves in different stages or seasons, which is hard to do sometimes. Like, especially if you're crushing it in like 2019, you're like, ah, I'm trying to navigate this new space. So I love that. Thank you for sharing that.
You know who was a great teacher for me in that was, I'm not sure if you've read her books, but Rachel Hollis said to me, you know, we're talking about, you know, pre-kids, I used to have a personal trainer 5 mornings a week. I'd run miles and miles and miles. I was super fit and all that sort of stuff. And now, like, you know, if I get on my yoga mat once a month, maybe, like, I'm doing great. And she's like, you are comparing yourself to someone, you know, 12, 13 years ago. Like, you need to compare yourself to who you were yesterday. And I'm like, oh, I mean, hallelujah. That's so right. You know, we compare ourselves to others and we compare ourselves to past versions of ourselves, which is just unattainable. So I love that thinking, like, just look at how you were yesterday. Did you improve slightly on yesterday? Then you're doing great.
Yes. I love that. Okay. Yeah. Emma, last random question for you. So we have a Spotify pump up playlist for this podcast. So I always ask guests, I know you're going to love this. So I always ask guests, like, what's one of your favorite go-to pump up jams? Like, if you're feeling in a funk and you need to just like shake your booty and get yourself hyped, what's a go-to song that you can add?
I love that. I love that. I think music is like an amazing anchor. So I can tell you where I was. Different songs came on. You know, like when I birthed my latest little guy, I did it on Instagram Live. Like, I live streamed the home birth of my little guy. So you can go check that out on my Instagram if you really want to. And so certain songs, like, I can play songs and know the moment that he came out, and that was a really powerful moment for me. Another song that really anchors for me is. It's called Green Light by Lorde. And that's because that was a sting track we used. We toured Kate Hudson in the country, and I got to interview her in every one of those events. And that's the sting track we used when we went up on stage. So I think music can be a really powerful, an anchor, right? For feelings. And I love to think back to those moments that made me feel powerful. So.
Yes. I love that. Great answer. Okay. So now where can people connect with you? Give us everything. Obviously we can buy the book everywhere. I'm going to link everything in the show notes, but tell us where we can find you.
So I am on all the socials at Emma Isaacs, also Business Chicks. So please, drop me a DM and I'd love to connect, emmaisaacs.com as well. But love your support with the book. I appreciate you, Keisha. Thank you so much for the opportunity to come on and to share my story. And I just love your vibe and your enthusiasm. It's everything. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Emma. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening in. If you love this episode, it would mean so much to me if you shared it with a girlfriend. Like, send it to her right now or post it on social media and tag me so I can personally thank you for helping me get the message out. I am so freaking grateful to be on this journey with you, girl. So until next time, I'll talk to you soon.